He said, make a list between now and next week, the next time we meet, of the things that you've done that have to fall into these two categories. You have to have liked doing it and you thought you were good at it, right? If you thought you were good at selling carpet but hated it, don't put it on the list, right? So, okay, so I make a list. The next week I sit across from him and he said, read each one slowly. Okay, being a father, being a husband, I thought I was good at it. I liked doing that, you know, and I made a list of about 20, 25 things. Finished reading the list and I looked at him and I said, okay. He said, and he was making notes. He said, reread this, this, and this. So I reread those three things. And I looked at him and I said, what's up? What are you doing? He says, when you say interviewing Holocaust survivors for Steven Spielberg, you light up. Why? And he flipped the switch and I went on and on about how much I just absolutely loved that. And he let me finish, which was smart. He was a good listener. And when I finished, he looked at me, he says, can you make a business out of doing something like that? And bam, the light bulb went off.
Welcome to the Repurpose Your Career podcast, brought to you by Career Pivot. This podcast is where those of us in the second half of life come together to discuss how to repurpose our careers for the 21st century. Come listen to career experts give you proven strategies. Listen to people like you tell their stories on how they repurpose their careers. And finally, get your questions answered. Your host, Mark Miller, has made six career pivots over the last 30 years. He understands this is not about jumping out of the frying pan into a fire, but rather to create a plan where you make clear, actionable steps or pivots to a better future career. Are you ready to repurpose your career?
Welcome to episode 87 of the Repurpose Your Career podcast. My name is Mark Miller, and I'll be your host every Monday for a discussion on what it's like to repurpose your career. If you're enjoying this podcast, please share it with other like-minded souls. The larger the audience we reach, the more people we can help. If you could subscribe on careerpivot.com or iTunes or wherever else you get this podcast, share it on social media, or just tell your neighbors and colleagues. Maybe even write an iTunes review. My original plan was to air part three of Can Juan Repurpose His Career, but I'm delaying that a week. Today's episode is a rebroadcast of episode 7 when I interviewed Mike O'Krent. Mike O'Krent, founder of Life Stories Alive, LLC, specializes in making personal history videos for families that value their heritage. They create family heirlooms in video, digitally mastered records of life stories with personal accounts, photos, and mementos of family history. I have known Mike for about 10 plus years and has been fascinating watching him grow his very unique business. I think you'll find Mike's journey quite fascinating. In fact, I got emotional just listening to it again. Now, you may be wondering, you're hearing a little thumping or other kinds of sounds because I'm down here in Mexico and we've got construction going around and I'm in a little house in Rubiar del Pilar, because I never can pronounce that correctly. And listen, if you want to, listen to last week's episode where I chronicled our trip down to Ajijic, Mexico. And if you look at my blog post from a couple of weeks ago, where I talk about some of the business aspects. But here is my interview with Mike O'Krent. Hello, everybody. I am sitting here in the beautiful Zach Scott Theater in Austin, Texas, with my buddy Mike O'Krent. I've already given you the Mike's bio, but Mike is an interesting guy, and I've probably known Mike 10 years. So thank you for being here, Mike.
Pleasure to be here. Glad to be here.
So let's start with the interview. Mike, can you tell me what you did in the first half of life?
In the first half of life, I was in the retail floor covering business, carpet and floor covering. You okay?
Yeah.
I went into a family business in San Antonio, Texas, where I was born and raised. Left the family business, but stayed in the carpet business for another few years. Moved to Austin in 1998 when I bought a store and then sold it in 2004. And didn't know what the heck I was going to do. I knew what I didn't want to do anymore, and that was the floor covering business. But I had no idea what direction my career would go and what I would do for a living.
You know, I remember us talking about before, I previously had written up Mike's story, and I'll have the link to that in the show notes. But I guess in that period, the carpeting business had changed pretty dramatically.
Oh, God, yes. When I started in the business with my grandfather, we would go to market in Chicago and Dallas. And at that time, there were about 200-plus carpet mills vying for the business of the retail carpet people all over the nation. When I left, there were three. The big guys got gobbled up the small guys, and the leverage of the business switched, I think, in my opinion, from the retailer to the manufacturer, which wasn't a horrible thing, but the negotiation wasn't there.
Yeah.
And overall, it wasn't as much fun as it used to be.
So, tell me what you do now.
It's 11 years ago I started this business. Life stories alive. What I do most of is connecting generations of families by interviewing their loved ones, and I capture those life stories on video. So in a way, I make documentaries for families.
Okay. And what was the culminating event or moment, defining moment or event where you got this idea for doing this kind of business?
I wish I could claim the idea myself. But as I mentioned, when I left the floor carpet business, I didn't know what I was going to do. I fortunately ran into a good business coach.
But when did you actually, the idea of you wanting to interview people?
Oh, thank you. Back in 1996, actually in 1995, and a few years before 1995, I was volunteering for the Jewish Federation of San Antonio, teaching about the Holocaust. They have a wonderful program. We go out to the schools and teach the Holocaust. Well, Steven Spielberg is filming Schindler's List in Poland, and survivors are coming up and saying they have a story they want to tell. So in his genius, he realizes that, you know, these survivors aren't going to be around forever. So he starts what was called then the Survivors of the Shoah, which Shoah means Holocaust in Hebrew, the Survivors of the Shoah Visual History Foundation. And he started this with a goal of capturing 50,000 survivor stories worldwide. We ended up capturing 52,000, by the way, in 39 languages all over the world. But when calls started to go into the foundation from Austin and San Antonio, South Texas, the foundation sent a letter to the Jewish Federation of San Antonio saying they need interviewers. If they know of anybody who was going to volunteer their time and expense to fly to Los Angeles to be trained, and I jumped all over it. I loved it. And learned the process of interviewing somebody. I don't have a journalism background. I have a business background. I knew nothing about this.
Well, heck, you were a carpeting guy.
They don't know much, right? I didn't know much. But they taught me how to do this, and I interviewed those survivors from 96 to 2000. And found it to be one of the most fascinating experiences of my life. So they taught me the process, but being the catalyst, the one responsible for sitting across from somebody, and in many cases for the first time in 50 years, they're telling their story. And knowing, as Spielberg said, we have one shot at this. So knowing that that was your shot and you were responsible for the stories coming out, the whole stories coming out, and that was a rush. That was an absolute thrill and a rush, and I loved it. But in 2000, the interviews were over, and I just went about my business in the carpet business after that.
So, what did you enjoy about doing all these interviews?
God, most everything is the answer. What I enjoy most, that's a good question. You know, I think the answer lies in the final question, their answer to the final question. They know it's the final question. By the way, it's the only question I tell them I'm going to ask. I want the rest of it to be like this, just conversational and in an interview. And the best reactions of a story is told through the knee jerk, you know, through the... But the last question is, do you have any closing comments to leave for future generations? And I ask that question, every single one of them. They'll answer the question, and then invariably I'll see the deep breath, the chills, it still gives me chills whenever I talk about it. They know that their stories are going to be captured for their great-grandchildren and great-great-grandchildren who will now know them like they never would before. That's what I love most about what I do.
Well, that must have been incredibly powerful, particularly because these people were Holocaust survivors.
Yeah, well, that's the Holocaust survivors, yeah. But I'm talking about that happening with every yep. life story that I do now. It's the same process. Are regular moms, dads, and grandmas yep. and grandpas.
Very cool. So what was the defining moment? As you said, you sold your carpeting business. I know you went off and went to work for, I forget who.
Administaff. A great company, it's an HR outsourcing company. Wonderful, wonderful company. But I realized the corporate world wasn't for me. And still yet, I had no idea what I was going to do, you know.
So what happened that allowed you to make the pivot?
Through my wife, I found a good business coach. And I sat across from him like I'm sitting across from you right now, Mark. And I said, I've known people in my lifetime that are passionate about their work. How can I find my passion? I don't know what I'm going to do, but I want to do something I care about. And he said, okay. He had me go through an exercise. Want another exercise?
Yes. Okay. We got the exercise.
He said, make a list between now and next week, the next time we meet, of the things that you've done that have to fall into these two categories. You have to have liked doing it and you thought you were good at it, right? If you thought you were good at selling carpet but hated it, don't put it on the list, right? So, okay, so I make a list. The next week I sit across from him and he said, read each one slowly. Okay, being a father, being a husband, I thought I was good at it, I liked doing that, you know, and I made a list of about 20, 25 things. Finished reading the list and I looked at him and I said, okay. He said, and he was making notes. He said, reread this, this, and this. So I reread those three things. And I looked at him and I said, what's up? What are you doing? He says, when you say interviewing Holocaust survivors for Steven Spielberg, you light up. Why? And he flipped the switch and I went on and on about how much I just absolutely loved that. And he let me finish, which was smart. He was a good listener. And when I finished, he looked at me and says, can you make a business out of doing something like that? And bam, the light bulb went off. And I thought, oh my God, I've got a process that I've learned. I could bootstrap it. I could do it out of my house. I know in Austin, Texas, where we are right now, there's many talented videographers and editors that I could, quote unquote, hire on a 1099 and subcontracting basis. And I started. Not knowing if I was going to make any money, not knowing what the market was, not knowing who the competition was, knowing nothing. I said, what the hell? Why not? It's something that I love doing. We'll see. You know, give it a while. If it doesn't work, you can always go to work somewhere else, you know?
Well, it's interesting because I very often, when I work on people's brand stories, I'll have people tell me, starting from elementary school or birth, you know, childhood on forward, and one of the things I pay attention to is their body language.
Mm.
And smart. when they light up.
Yeah.
And you don't see that.
You don't see that.
We don't see ourselves.
Oh, of course. Right.
We can't.
Yeah.
And it's a matter of getting someone who can sit across from you.
Yes.
Who can see, wow, you got excited.
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
I'll use the example. I interviewed Kerry Hannon, who writes for AARP, and it's the podcast right before this one, episode 6. And I asked her at the end of the interview, tell me how your career now has pivoted and morphed. And she just, you could tell it in her voice. She got excited. Now, I guarantee you, I could hear it, but she probably couldn't.
Correct. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, how did you get your first client?
Oh, again, my wife. She had met a guy who, without giving his background yet, she just introduced me to this guy, and he was an officer at a bank that was opening here in Austin, right? And we were invited to the opening. So I went to the opening with him and with my wife, and she introduced me to Bill. Well, Bill was a former chair of the Austin Chamber of Commerce. Bill was with 3M for 37 years. And he greeted me very kindly, and he said, I'd love to meet with you. If I could do anything to help you, let me know. So I decided I'm going to start this business. And I thought, well, I'm going to call Bill. He's connected. And he seems like a really nice, honest guy. And he'll tell me what he thinks about this. Now, I went in knowing I was going to do the following. So I told him all about the business. And he asked me some really good questions about pricing and about all this other stuff regarding the business. And then at the end, I said, Bill, I got a proposition for you. I want you to be my first guinea pig. Free of charge, I'm going to do your life story, if you'll allow me to. He said, sure. So I did. When I finished, I sat in his office again, and he opened up his Rolodex, and he started making phone calls. He said, this is great. And it was fun. I still laugh about it, because the way Bill works, he'll call somebody right there in front of you. And I'll say, Jim, I've got this guy in my office, Michael Krent. He's got the greatest business. You need to do business with him. Here. And he hands me the phone. I don't know who's on the other end. I have no idea, but that's how it started.
Now, obviously, the technology has changed a lot since you first got started.
Yep.
Because you used to do DVDs.
Oh, yeah.
And you still do that?
Yes, for those who want me to deliver it on DVD.
Okay.
There's different technologies. We can send it up to the cloud. We can do all kinds of things with technology. In fact, when we first started, we delivered it on, I think I delivered one on tape. You know, the VHS or some kind of a tape that they want. Anyway, now some people have told me, well, we don't have the technology to do this. Let me tell you something. Technology has been out since a voice could be recorded. So technology has always been an excuse for not to do a live story. It will always be adapted to the new technology. Technology has changed a bunch.
Yeah, it's changed a lot.
Yeah.
So how have you envisioned this business to be something. How has it morphed or changed since you got started? Because you've been in it now, what, 10 years?
Yeah, it'll be, next month will be 11 years.
Okay.
How has it changed? My God, it's changed a bit. I knew going into it, I wanted to do family stories, personal life stories, and I'm still doing a lot of those. But I realized, and maybe I forget who the first client I did this for was, but every business has a story too. Let's face it, you know, I grew up in business, in a retail business, as I mentioned, and that has a story. And the best way to convey to a customer the heart and soul of what you're trying to do is through your story. So I thought, well, maybe I can do that for businesses. And then I knew I'm on the board of nonprofit organizations or two, and they certainly have a story. And the way to pull a heartstring for a potential donor is to the stories, especially some of the nonprofits that are around, that for, you know, for kids, for animals, for the arts, for, you know, things like that. When you interview and get across from the people, and the magic of video is this following. Audio is great, like we're doing right now, because you can use one of your senses. You can hear the voice and the tone of the voice. But when you can see the faces, the expressions, the emotion, that really can pull a heartstring for a nonprofit organization or can get the attention of a customer for a business. So the business has branched out into, and fortunately I was, I guess, smart enough to listen to that there were some needs out there and people that could pay for those needs through businesses and nonprofit organizations.
Now, I remember when we met through Metropolitan Breakfast Club many years ago.
Yes.
And I remember you talking about possibly at some point franchising this.
Yes.
So what happened to that franchising model? Right.
That was the original intention. That was the original story. And the idea is still a great idea. Let's face it, not through franchising, but Steven Spielberg managed to capture 52,000 stories in 39 languages all over the world, doing a franchise type model, not for a business, but he had a system that he duplicated from place to place, trained the interviewers to do this, and it got done, right? So I thought, what the hell, why not do that as a franchise model? A little more complicated than it seems. At some point, and I'm getting to the point where I need to duplicate myself. That's the hardest part of it. All the rest of the processes I've got down. But duplicating the interviewer is what I need to do. And so it's still possible. But my life has been fulfilled immensely by the individual interviews that I do and keeping myself very productive and busy and fulfilled.
Well, the interesting one I find is when we've talked, we always meet over at Coffee Bean and Tea Leaf. Right. We both hang out there. And the fact that You interview people. You don't do the video. You don't do the audio. Correct. You don't do any of that.
Correct.
So why do you just simply do the interviewing and you hire everything else out?
Good question. There are very few, relatively few people that do what I do throughout the nation, right? Some of them are the one-man show, is what I call them, or the jack of all trades. I chose not to do that. My specialty is in the interview, being the interviewer. So there's many reasons why I don't run the camera at the same time. Number one, I guess the best analogy for this that I can use, if I want a really good photograph of myself, I could whip out my iPhone and stretch my arm and do a selfie, right? But if I want a really good photograph, I hire a professional videographer because they know things that I don't know, not only about the technology and the equipment, but about light and about everything else that is involved with that. With video production, you've got not just that from the camera and the light, but you've also got audio. So there's many components there that I could do myself, but by hiring a professional, that ends up looking and sounding better, right? Another component is editing. Video editing is it's an art. I think it's an art if done correctly or done professionally. And there are professional video editors out there. It's a very, very long process. To edit 1 hour of video can take hours and hours and hours. 4, 5, 6, I don't know. My time's better spent doing something else, like getting new customers, like meeting people and doing, so I hire the editors as well. But one of the main reasons why I don't shoot the video myself is because, and I teach a workshop on listening skills, if I'm gonna be an intent listener, I can't be worried about what the video is looking like. I can't be worried about what it's sounding like. I can have earbuds in, but if there's an outside sound that is a distraction, that's exactly what it is. It's a distraction to me paying attention to what my interviewee is saying. And I don't want that to ever happen. That's why I choose to hire the professional.
Now, I purposely asked you that question because I knew what you're going to say.
Right.
But one of the biggest challenges for solopreneurs and aspiring entrepreneurs is feeling like you have to do it all.
Yeah.
And it's a real challenge I have because I am what they refer to as very horizontally skilled. I mean, I know how to do a lot of stuff.
Yep.
So even like this podcast, I have someone who's going to do the editing and make me sound good.
Sure.
But I don't do that stuff.
Right.
I know how to do it, but I don't do it. So now that you've been in this business for 10 years, 11 years, how has it turned out? What would you have done differently?
Wow. What would I have done different? Marketing? I've done all right with word of mouth. Currently, I am working with a marketing professional who I highly recommend, by the way. You'll recognize his name because his father is famous. He has the same name. He's a junior. He's Don Osmond Jr.
Okay.
And Donnie Osmond has a few kids, and he has a son, Don, who has a marketing company here in town. He's wonderful to work with. And we're putting together a marketing plan for 2017. Had I done that earlier, perhaps I would have grown quicker. Perhaps. Who knows? Everything happens for a reason. I'm happy I'm doing this right now. So that's one of the things I would have done differently. I really can't think of anything that I would have done differently. Did I make mistakes? Absolutely, I made mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes. But mistakes happen for a reason, and they're learning experiences as far as I'm concerned. And I've learned a lot from the mistakes that I've made.
Well, I think you picked, because you went right through the Great Recession, and you picked a business that is relatively recession-proof.
Yeah.
Because the people who can afford you still have money.
Yes. The challenge is not recession or money. The challenge is that people don't know that the service exists.
Right.
You know, we all know that cars are there, so we go out and buy cars, and we can shop cars because we know what we're shopping for. People have no idea that the service exists. So my biggest challenge is to get the word out that there's a professional out there that does these things for families. And I can't tell you how often I've heard when they find out what I do, oh, that's the coolest thing. I've never heard of anything like that. I wished I would have known you X number of months or years ago when grandma or grandpa was still alive.
Yeah. So I purposely picked Mike to tell his story because it's a common theme of most of us who've made what I call second half of life transitions or pivots, is the fact that there was something, the light went on at some point in time.
Yep.
And he didn't do anything with it, right? And then there was some other period that finally kicked you in the ass.
Yes.
To finally go do it.
Yep.
And that can take significant amount of time. And you're, what, three, four, 5 years. Mm-hmm. And then finally, the last point is it didn't turn out exactly as you planned.
No.
And the fact that you were willing to kind of morph and pivot along with whatever happened. Mm-hmm. I always claim, it's like we talked before, when I've developed curriculum all over the world, no matter who I think the audience is, it's always different.
Sure.
And you just have to be able to be prepared to be nimble and kind of move along and kind of going, okay, this is what the market wants, so we'll go that direction.
Yeah. We're sitting here at Zach Theater. I'm on the board here, and we have a wonderful strategic we have a managing director who does a great job, and she runs the business side. There's been a strategic plan. The one thing she makes very clear is the plan is very detailed. It's very well thought out about all the things that we do here, but it's an organic plan. And most good plans should be organic. And what I mean by organic is they need to change with what's going on. You need to be able to swerve the ship if the current decides to shift. And I'm fortunate that sometimes we don't. Sometimes we go off course a little bit because we're not listening well. But if we do listen and are open enough to try new things, provided they don't cost us the business, you know. So it's been a fun ride.
Yeah, very cool.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. If someone wants to learn more about Mike and Life Stories Alive, how can they do that?
I have a website, lifestoriesalive.com. They can contact me directly on my email, which is mokrent, M-O-K-R-E-N-T, at lifestoriesalive.com. Or they can call me, too. You're going to put a phone number on there?
If you want.
Oh, will I get prank calls from your listeners? What kind of people listen to you, Mark? I don't know. Okay, 512-431-8166.
And we'll put that in the show notes also.
Thank you very much.
Yes, I have on my home page, I have the telephone number. And yes, people actually call me.
Wow.
They use a phone.
That's great. It's unusual these days. Well, if I get a lot of prank and nasty phone calls now, I'm going to blame you.
Okay.
Okay? Is that okay?
Great. Thank you, Mike.
My pleasure. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that episode. Mike has taken a different path that most of us wouldn't think would be very practical, but he has made it work. Please pick up a copy of Repurpose Your Career, a practical guide for the second half of life at Amazon.com or any of the other fine online retailers. When you complete reading the book, I'd very much appreciate if you would write an honest review on Amazon.com. The audio version of this book is available on iTunes, Audible, and Amazon. Lastly, I'm working on the Career Pivot Community website. The website is in production. Probably by the time this airs, I've finished recruiting for the fifth cohort, which my goal is to bring on in mid-July. If you're interested in learning more about the endeavor and would like to be put on a waiting list for the next cohort, please go to careerpivot.com/community. When you sign up, you'll receive more information about the community as it evolves. It is those who are in these initial cohorts get to set the direction of this endeavor. This is a paid membership community where I am offering group coaching, special content, mastermind groups, branding sessions, and more importantly, it will be a place where you can seek help. Please go to careerpivot.com/community to sign up to learn more. Check back next week when I will air the third part of Can Juan Repurpose His Career? Thank you for listening all the way to the end of the Repurpose Your Career podcast. You will find all the show notes at careerpivot.com/episode87. Please hop over to careerpivot.com and subscribe to get updates on this podcast and all the other happenings at Career Pivot. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or Spotify. Hope to see you next Monday for another episode of Repurpose Your Career Podcast.
Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.